Live from Earth, it's Space Radio. This is Paul Sutter, and coming up, we're talking about insightful insights into Mars. Who needs clouds anyway? And of course, taking listener questions about all things in the universe, because that's exactly what this show is about. We record every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern. So call 888-581-0708 to join the conversation. And in today's Blue Shift, I'll be talking about the future of space radio. That was not an effect by Greg. I did that myself. But first, the news. Hello, space fans. Welcome to Space Radio. I'm Paul Sutter, astrophysicist at Ohio State, chief scientist at COSINE. For the next half hour, your agent of the stars. We've got an exciting show for you today on Space Radio, where we talk about all the things in the universe, because that's what this show is about. This show lives on listener questions. We record every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern here in Studio A of WCBE Radio Columbus. So call 888-581-0708. You can also follow along in the live streams on YouTube and Twitch. Check out spaceradioshow.com for the links. And hello to the space cadets in Salt Lake City, Utah, and Hutto, Texas, and all over the world who are watching live right now. You can also follow me on social media. I'm at Paul Matt Sutter on all channels. Seriously, folks, I prepped 10 minutes of show material tops. So get those calls and questions in. Before I start taking calls, though, I wanted to share some interesting bits of news that I caught recently. And the big thing this week, the big thing amongst the big things, is the launch of NASA's InSight mission to Mars. Now, you might be thinking, and honestly, this was my first impression when NASA announced years ago the InSight mission and now launched, is like, really? Another mission to Mars? Like, don't we have like 50 satellites and spacecraft and rovers and robots and whatnots all on the Martian surface? Like, you got to send another one? And originally, I wasn't too excited about this, but I have been convinced. I have been converted. I am now officially announcing I am excited for the InSight mission, because InSight is doing something really cool that no other spacecraft has done before. It is bringing a seismometer. It is going to measure Mars quakes, which are like earthquakes, but on Mars, hence the name Mars quakes. It's also going to have attached to it, it's a lander, by the way, it also has attached to it a probe that's going to go, I think, 5 meters down below the surface to measure the heat flow. Now, what's the big deal? A seismometer, a heat probe, like, what do we learn from that? We learn what Mars is made of. We learn about the interior contents of Mars the exact same way we use seismometers all over the Earth to measure the interior contents of the Earth. Because when earthquakes happen, an earthquake is a sound wave that travels through the mantle, the core, in the crust. These are vibrations in the Earth itself. And depending on what the Earth is made of, and depending on how that stuff is distributed within the Earth, where's the dense stuff, where's the not so dense stuff, where's the gooey bits, where's the nougat, where's the toffee, where's the almonds? You can tell what the Earth is made of by listening to it. And so this mission, InSight, is going to listen to Mars. And the big question we have here is, we have our four terrestrial rocky planets in the solar system: Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars. They all started out, we're pretty sure, started out pretty much the same way, formed through the same mechanisms. We're all from the same protoplanetary disk, but we all came out totally different, right? Mercury is nothing like Venus. Venus isn't anything like the Earth. Earth isn't anything like Mars. How did these differences come about? When we're trying to study the early solar system, the early days, the formation of the solar system, looking at Earth is tough because our surface continually recycles itself. You know, the continents rub up against each other and subduct and crash. And so our surface is constantly renewing itself. And we've lost a lot of the records, the geological records of the early days of Earth. Not so on Mars. It preserves a memory because it's not tectonically active. It preserves a memory of the good old days in the early solar system. So by studying how Mars is now, by listening to it, by trying to figure out what the interior contents of Mars are like, we get a window into the formation of the solar system and all the rocky planets, including the Earth. So ironically, in order to understand the Earth, we must go to Mars. I feel like that should be a t-shirt saying. I don't know. That's the latest greatest when it comes to space, but it's time to have a conversation. All right. We've got a caller. Hey, Carson. Thanks for calling Space Radio. Where on Earth are you?
I am in beautiful Victorville, California.
Victorville, California. Now, I have to say, I've lived in California for 3 years. I do not know where Victorville is. Can you tell me where it is in California?
Well, count your blessings. I'm just up here temporarily. Most of the local people here, they call it Victimville.
Ouch. Ouch.
So you get the idea. It's just a suburb of Los Angeles that is about 3,000 feet high, going on the way, the 15 freeway on the way from L.A. to Vegas. It's not much to do but watch the rocks grow.
Hey, but I bet because of the mountains you get some good dark skies.
Yeah. It's different, but yeah, I just came up here for certain reasons, and I'll be going back down. We say going back down the hill because the plate tectonics, you know, the LA subducts and raises what we call the upper desert, and it's raised it 3,000 feet. And when you go up when you're going up the 15 way up, and then on your way to Vegas, and then the continent actually tilts away from the ocean towards Vegas. And that's why that's towards Death Valley and all. And that's why we're only like one of like three where rivers flow inland instead of towards the ocean.
That's actually, so you have because your own little isolated watershed because of the tilting of the shelf, the continental shelf, right in that little pocket.
If we had a claim to fame, I would say anyways, it would have to be our water aquifer that is pristine because nobody wants to be out here, including business, so it's not polluted, and we have plenty of it, and we're the only place in Southern California that has water anymore. So that means we have water wars, and everybody from L.A. to San Diego is suing us to try to get all our water.
Yeah, I saw the documentary about that. I think it was called Mad Max. Something like that. I vaguely remember, but that's absolutely fascinating. I'm actually very curious about geology and watersheds. And thank you so much for sharing that with me and our listeners. You did call in, though, with a science and space question, though, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I did. It has to do with the expansion of the universe. Basically, I think we do not know why the expansion of the universe. And we say something called dark matter, perhaps, which is a code name for me. We don't have a clue and probably in the dark about it. Now, I wonder about the basic elements and their characteristics and thermodynamics, and why wouldn't, in my view, a possible theory of why the expansion of the universe couldn't be explained by thermodynamics that is involved in every element that composes the solar systems and the universe. I would imagine that every element, however small it is, gives off energy because it exists as an element. Now, if you're in the subatomic world, the amount of energy that is radiated out because there is activity that is one of the constituent parts of any element could be influenced upon by that element. Now, I know for a fact that solar systems themselves do not expand away from each other, the planets in that system. And I know that for a fact because I called you, and you told me that. So it's got to be a fact.
It's true fact. Now, true fact of the universe. Unfortunately, we're actually approaching our break time in just a little bit. So I'm going to cut you off because there's actually several questions here that are all wrapped up together, and I want to take a little bit of time so I make sure that each question is done justice. And I think I see where you're going. Let me answer the very first question or topic, which is we live in an expanding universe. This was discovered 100 years ago by Edwin Hubble. We know why the universe is expanding. It turns out that the natural consequence, the natural state of the universe is to be dynamic, is to be expanding. And we didn't realize this until we had Einstein's general relativity. And when Einstein took the mathematics of general relativity and applied it to the whole entire universe as a single physical object, he discovered that a static, perfectly uniform universe is unstable. It is not stable. It must.
And I don't think he believed that, did he? At first, did he believe that even?
Right. At first, when he first developed this theory, we thought the universe was static. So he added in some fudge factors to make a static universe. And then a few years later, Edwin Hubble said, oh, by the way, universe is expanding. So when no one was looking, Einstein scribbled that out. And we've moved on. But speaking of moving on, that's the end of this segment. I will stay on the line, Carson. I want to keep talking to you. Remember, this is Space Radio. Don't forget to call 888-581-0708 to join the conversation. You can also catch the live streams on YouTube and Twitch. Visit spaceradioshow.com for the links. And this show is brought to you by you. That's right. Go to patreon.com/PMSutter to learn how you can keep this show on the air. And I'll see you after the break.
Let's start every weekend together with the newer You Inc. With me, Rhea Greif, Saturdays at 2:30 p.m. This week, grab the tissues. We have three sisters who take us on their journey of love and pain through the breaking and blending of their families for a two-part special with Eva Catalan, Cheryl Johnson, and Laurie McCann for three generations of lessons. Join us for You Inc., Saturday's new must for a new you, presented to you on Central Ohio's NPR station, 90.5 WCBE.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Paul Sutter, and this is Space Radio. We've got Carson still on the line. Now, I want to talk to Carson a little bit, and there's a very cool question that came up from the Space Cadets in a live stream that I want to get to. So, Carson, we were talking about the expansion of the universe. The universe must be expanding. We do know why the universe is expanding. The universe does have components that we call dark matter and dark energy. Dark matter, we have a pretty decent idea what that is. It's a substance that doesn't interact with light. Dark energy, pretty much no clue. That's a whole other show. In this discussion of energy and what is the role of energy in the universe and in the expansion of the universe, energy, the word energy, has a bajillion different meanings. In physics, the word energy has a very, very specific meaning. In physics, energy is the ability to do work. Energy is the ability to apply a force over a distance. Now, this energy can take different forms. It can be kinetic energy. It can be potential energy. It can be radiative energy. There's many different kinds of energy, but they all boil down to the ability to do work, to apply a force over a distance. Now, when you have an isolated particle, just a particle sitting by itself, not minding its own business, that particle does have energy because Einstein taught us with special relativity that mass and energy are equivalent. You remember E equals mc squared, that whole deal? C squared, that's the speed of light. That's just a conversion factor. Don't worry about that. E equals m. E equals m. Energy equals mass. Mass equals energy. They are identical. They are the exact same thing, mass and energy. So every particle, everything in the universe has an energy associated with it, with itself, because it has mass. This energy, this mass, affects the global evolution of the universe because general relativity teaches us that there is a connection between the mass and energy in a system and the dynamics, the evolution of that system. Now, you can apply, that's exactly what the mathematics says. And you can take those mathematics and you can apply it to different situations. You can apply it to our solar system. You say, well, there's a big thing called the sun and a whole bunch of planets. They have mass, they're affecting space-time, that affects their dynamics. Voila, solar system dynamics. You can apply it to galaxies. You can apply it to galaxy clusters. You can apply it to the whole entire universe as a single physical object. In this language, in this viewpoint provided by general relativity, the contents of the universe drive the future evolution of the universe. How quickly the universe expands or contracts over different kinds of timescales is determined by the contents of the universe. So our universe is made of matter. There's a bunch of radiation blowing around. There's some dark matter, actually a lot of dark matter. There's this mysterious thing that we call dark energy. There's ingredients to the universe. They all have mass or energy of some form, and they all contribute to the future evolution of the universe because they are affecting the fundamental space-time of the universe, and the fundamental space-time of our universe governs its future dynamics. So, Carson, you are actually on the right track. There is a connection between matter, energy, and the ultimate fate of the universe. That connection is brought to you by... That'd be great if I had a sponsor right there. But no, it's just Albert Einstein. Just general relativity is the framework for making exactly that sort of connection. Excellent question, Carson. Thank you so much for calling. I do want to get to a question on the live stream from the Space Cats. Remember, you are listening to Space Radio. You can call 888-581-0708 and experience the transcendental joy that Carson just did, that being able to talk to me. Not that I'm super special, but I know a thing or two about space, and that's really handy to talk to your own personal astrophysicist. Now, on the live stream, the Space Cats, we had a Cirilio asking very early on in the show about black holes and about black holes forming in the very early days of the universe. So nowadays, our universe produces black holes like all the time. A few per century per galaxy is the rate of black hole production in our universe. And they are formed from the deaths of massive stars. You have to wonder, is there any other way to produce black holes? And the answer is kind of. If you go back to the very early days of the universe, I'm talking about like the first five seconds of the Big Bang. Things are crazy, things are hot, things are dense, weird things can happen. You can potentially spontaneously form some small-ish black holes in that early universe. These black holes arise from random density fluctuations, like you just get a hot pocket, not hot pocket, but a pocket of hot gas that contracts, forms a black hole, or you get it through some exotic phase transition happening in their early days. Boom, you get a universe flooded with black holes. These black holes can persist throughout these 13.8 billion years since those momentous events and still just kind of sort of hang around in our universe. That is a possibility. It is not a favored possibility. We don't think that is a likely story of the early days of our universe, because if you start flooding the early universe with a whole bunch of black holes, you start to affect some of the observational signatures that have persisted since those early days. And the key observational signature we have of the early days of the universe is something called the cosmic microwave background. This is the baby picture of the universe. It is light left over from when the universe was only 280,000 years old. That's over 13.8 billion years ago. That light has persisted. We can see it. And if you start monkeying around with stuff that happened before the generation of the cosmic microwave background, this background light, you affect the properties of the light itself. Because if you start mixing it around, you're going to generate a different light pattern. We can see that light pattern. We can use this to test theories and models of the universe. And when you start flooding the universe with too many black holes in the early days, you start messing up the cosmic microwave background to such a point that it no longer agrees with observations, and you're ruled out. Get out of here. Now, there is still some slight windows where you can produce some black holes in the early universe, not enough to conflict with observations, but enough that you can still get another grant. I don't know. And the hunt is on to see if any of those, what we call primordial black holes, persist to the present day and do interesting astrophysical stuff like run into stars and blow things up. I don't know. That search hasn't turned up anything fruitful. It is still a possibility. I'm going to classify it as a narrow possibility. Thank you, Cirilio, on the live stream Space Cadet channel for that wonderful question. We're almost out of time today on Space Radio. This show goes way too fast, folks. But before we go, it's time for the Blue Shift. I'm Paul Sutter, and you're listening to Space Radio, and this is The Blue Shift, my opportunity to get a little bit closer to you. And you know how I mentioned that this show just like flies by? I swear I just started it like 10 seconds ago. Maybe it felt a little bit slower for you listening, but me here in the studio, it went by like that. So I want to tell you about some of our future plans. We want to extend this show to be an hour long. We want to go longer. And there are so many fun, funny, engaging, brilliant scientists, science communicators, artists who are inspired by art out there in the world. I want to bring them on the show. I want to talk to them, mostly for my own selfish purposes, because I think they're really cool. And the only way to convince them to pick up the phone is if I say, pick up the phone, and there's a radio show attached to it. So we're working on that, on being able to build out the show to include guests so you can hear some amazing people, some brilliant voices broadcast right into your ear holes, the best, the latest science. In order to do that, we're actively searching out for partnerships, for sponsors. That's why I'm hitting the Patreon button so hard, patreon.com/PM Sutter, because it's those contributions that we are building up so that we can go to have an hour-long show. Next week, I'm going to bring a very special guest on the show. Her name is Sky. She's a Twitch science communicator, and we're bringing her on to co-host that show because we're testing some of the fundamental technology that we need, where we can do a live stream with video, with caller, so you can call and talk to the guest. So it's not just me and the guest. That's not the plan. It's not just me and Greg and the guest. It's you too, where you'll be able to call up, talk to the guest, ask the guest questions. I'll field questions from the YouTube and Twitch chats, of course, but I want you to be able to talk one-on-one with these amazing guests. Though that's the plan. That's the goal. That's the hope. That's an aspiration. In order to make that happen, we need your help. Go to patreon.com/PM Sutter. That's why I'm pitching and pushing Patreon, because we want to make this show bigger, better, awesomer, and spacier. It will maintain the same amount of Greg, though, so the Greg amount will stay constant, but everything else will expand to be better, because we're all in this together, folks. We all share this universe. I fundamentally believe that the universe is knowable and understandable by everyone. I'm doing my best to make that possible. I'm making my dreams be no longer dreams. I totally bungled that quote, but that's okay. Patreon.com/PM Sutter. Stick with us for updates as we go to expand the show and make it better so that science can be shared. And unfortunately, this broadcast is almost done. Thank you for joining me on this voyage of space radio. Once again, I'm Paul Sutter, and this show is brought to you by the Ohio State University Department of Astronomy. Learn more at astronomy.osu.edu. This show is also brought to you by, you guessed it, you. Visit patreon.com/PM Sutter to learn how you can make this show possible. Thanks to Greg Mobius for producing, Dan Michalko for being awesome, and all the fine crew at WCB Radio for making this show possible. We record every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can call 888-581-0708 to join me on the air. You can also follow along on the live streams on YouTube and Twitch. Go to spaceradioshow.com for the links. And of course, thanks again, Earthlings, for listening. See you next week. And remember, science is for sharing, end of transmission.